This past week was madness. It is March after all. We'll look into some names that stood out, some images that'll stick with us, and things that we overall just liked. Plus, how in the world are the committees going to decide who are the 4-1 seeds? We try to take a crack at it here on today's edition of the College Basketball Power Hour. Welcome in to the College Basketball Power Hour. She's Ice Young. He is Jason Fitz. I am Caroline Fenton. Fitz, Ice, I hope that you're doing better than the Big 12 tournament floor looked this past weekend, because I think my eyes are still adjusting. Welcome in, guys. How we doing?
Good.
I mean,
I agree, though. That floor was horrendous.
It was so bad.
I love that that's so where bad. You started. We just started by throwing all sorts of shade at the Big 12 and some weird decisions. But yeah, I'm with you on that.
Some creative liberties were taken, and I appreciate that. I don't want to yuck anyone's yum, but if you haven't seen it, highly recommend you go check it out. It's like a massive gray floor covered in hundreds and hundreds of Roman numeral 12s, like X's and I's all over the place. It's like the greatest optical illusion. I kind of had to take a break watching, like every few seconds or every few minutes, I had to look away, like rub my eyes, but I digress, because other than
wait, Caroline. I want to yuck yum.
It.
All right. You don't yuck yum. I'm all in on yuck and yum. I'm going to use that expression too much now. The one thing I'd say is, like, this is just a general core belief for me. Like, if you have to tell people we the best music, then you are not making the best music. Like, if you have to tell people that your name is Jason Derulo, then you've done something wrong. Like, if in every song you have to tell somebody who you are, something's gone wrong. If you have to change the floor, and the NBA can hear me on this too. If you have to change the floor to try and convince people that something important is happening, then you've done the wrong things all the way across the board. I'm yucking the yum.
I don't understand the thought process behind it. It's the same thing with Georgia has a funky court. It's like a silhouette of a bulldog on the court. Hate it. Oregon's court is funky with the kind of trees on it. I hated
playing on Oregon's court. Went out there, I think my second year at Syracuse, and was like, what is this? I can't even run without thinking I'm about to trip over trees. What's going on?
It is so disorienting. And I can only imagine if the trees were that disorienting, how bad the X's and the I's were on the Big 12 tournament court. And we've got some teams in the Big 12 that could really use some wins here in the men's tournament. So at the end of the day, when you're sitting up at the press conference and saying, I'm so sorry that I missed that final shot. No, I'm so sorry that I went 3-for-12 from the free throw line. The X's and the I's were throwing me off. You might say that's excuse making. Au contraire, I say that's fair. And I say that that is a design flaw. We had an awesome weekend of hoops. We had buzzer beaters. St. John's wins it on a buzzer beater against Marquette. Alabama won it on a buzzer beater. Mark Sears with the shot of the day, taking down the number one team in the country. Their bitter rival, Auburn. We had women's conference tournaments. You had South Carolina, TCU, Duke, and UCLA winning their conference tournaments respectively. So let's get into all of it. We've got a stacked and loaded show. Let's start with the game of NIL. We all know NIL, name, image, likeness. We do name, image, liked it. Let's start with name. Ice, let's start with you. A name that stuck out to you after this weekend.
Continuing the theme of all things NIL, I'm actually going to go with Steph Curry here. It stood out to me that he joined Davidson Basketball as an assistant GM, and I know he's not on the court and playing, but I believe that this is a trend we're going to keep seeing. We're going to keep seeing big names like Woj and Steph join basketball programs and really work on their NIL, their notoriety. The key thing that stood out to me about Steph Curry, though, joining Davidson Basketball is that it's men's and women's basketball. We need to get Woj and St. Bonaventure to do basketball all together collectively, but Steph is helping with both men's and women's basketball. I think it's cool to have, obviously, Steph Curry in anything that you do brand-wise, but it connects the college game to the alums, to the professional game. And I think it's a really cool opportunity for those athletes that are to come. So to me, that was something that stood out of all things like March Madness, just the more money that we're pumping into college athletics, the more notable people we get to help out with that. And I think that's really cool for Davidson basketball.
By the way, like, Woj is a good buddy. We talked over the course of the weekend. I'm going to throw that out to him. Like, it's just there's no reason that they shouldn't combine these forces. And I love what you're talking about here because, frankly, for years, if you graduated from a school or you played at a school and you make it in the league, the school comes back to you and asks for you to donate. Instead of just donating, this is a way for you to actually become involved in so much of what happens for the future of the program and for the future of the kids. Like, if you're Steph and you're making a phone call to somebody, that has resonance, you know? If you're helping bring in somebody to Davidson, like, you're not just coming in. It's like the age-old... what coach can get me to the next level? What coach can take me to the NBA or the WNBA? Now you've got what infrastructure can take me to the next level? That's a way different conversation I love every ounce of. So, you know, we'll hold Woj's feet to the fire, which is difficult to do, but I agree with you. I'll give you a name that I loved this weekend only because I told you guys going into the weekend, I couldn't wait for Michigan State. Turns out only like the first 3 minutes of that game were worth a damn, but Michigan State and Trey Holloman. I want to give Trey a little bit of love here. Every time he runs around, I don't know if it's the five or it's the headband, but it's just Cassius Winston all over again. And I kept thinking about the COVID shortened season that I thought Sparty might win the national championship game that year, or they might win the national championship that year. It never happened. And I look at this and it's very similar. Like when you need somebody to attack and be aggressive and change the flow of the game, when you need somebody to get you a bucket, when you need somebody to get to the line, when you need somebody that can sort of shift momentum, Trey has been doing that. And over the course of the weekend, just watching how easy he made it look against a Michigan team that I think is pretty good. Yeah, that was a statement to me. So I've been hard on the deficiencies of Michigan State because I think they have a national championship caliber basketball team this year. And I watched that game and thought, man, it's time to ease up a little bit and just credit where credit is due to Trey and to the way they've played.
I thought you were going in a different direction there when I saw Trey Holloman there on our rundown. Maybe just with what we saw in the last few seconds of the game.
I mean, maybe a little shoving action. Like,
a little.
I loved Izzo chippiness. Coming out and being like, we have our traditions. Like, I don't know, man. Guys standing at half court while someone's shooting free throws, I think they probably have the right to be there. But, you know, yeah, senior night makes everybody a little crazy.
Look, I didn't have a problem with it. If you want to let them know, let them know. If you want to make a statement after you've already made a statement on the scoreboard, by all means, make a statement. And if you are willing to get up in front of the cameras and reporters after the game and talk about why you did it and how you knew that it was wrong, then and you want to own up to it, then fine. Like, you're a big boy, you're a grown man. You can make the decisions that you want to make as long as you can kind of, I'm not going to say apologize for them, but I guess atone for them. I had no problem with it, Ice.
I was going to say, listen, it's March. We're here to hurt feelings.
Right.
That's what we're here to do. There's nothing
not
nice
a tea
about
party.
It. I'm only being nice to my 12 or 13 other teammates and my coaches. Everybody else, you can get it or get out. I don't mind it at all.
Yeah.
I also do think it speaks to how unafraid Michigan State is of Michigan. That everybody,
facts.
Like, look, they kicked the snot out of him twice. They might see him again. You never know. You never know how things are going to go. They might see him again, and they ain't worried about it. Like, for Holloman to basically, like, stand by it, for Izzo to stand by it, like, they are standing up as a team and saying, I don't really care if it pissed you off. We are who we are. Like, I love that brazenness.
Michigan has been the topic of discussion in several little scuffles that happened in the middle of the playing surface in the 2024-2025 school year, obviously going back to the Ohio State game. But yeah, I mean, it's March, it happens, tensions are high, and Michigan State absolutely made a statement in that matchup with Michigan. Before I get to my name, I wanted to make a quick thought on Ice, your point about Steph Curry. Whenever the NIL era began, I think it was a fair concern. I had it too, that the big just get bigger. You know, the Dukes in basketball and the Ohio States in football, they're just going to have more money and just get even better than everyone. And maybe there's a fair argument to be made that that is the case, since Ohio State did just in fact win the national championship. But I think we've also seen a trickle down effect that now some of these smaller names, smaller schools, smaller programs are getting in on the action as well. And we're kind of seeing a trend of big-time names now being huge recruiting tools. You mentioned Woj at St. Bonaventure. We saw Deion Sanders go to Colorado, and now Michael Vick was just hired as the head football coach at Norfolk State. two schools that maybe aren't football powerhouses, but you attach those names, names of legends to those programs, now all of a sudden you have some of the top talent in the country that are interested to go into those programs. Just like St. Bonaventure and Davidson. That's not Duke. That's not North Carolina. That's not Kansas. Like, those aren't blue bloods in college basketball. But if you're a four-star, five-star kid who's getting offers from everywhere in the country, and you have the opportunity to be advised by, possibly even coached by, mentored by Steph freaking Curry, then yeah, why not give Davidson a look? So I think it's not only just so interesting to see the business side of things, but the way that this star power has influenced recruiting, or at least will influence recruiting, I think has been incredibly interesting. But to get to the, my name, what really stood out to me, or who really stood out to me, it's Bree Hall from South Carolina. We are all attracted to offense, right? Like, scoring points is sexy. Like, we want the 40, 50-point game. We talk about that, and it's for good reason. Look, we're all guilty of it. We all want offense. We all want home runs and touchdowns and, you know, massive threes and high-scoring games like that. But defense makes the difference, and defense absolutely made the difference for South Carolina against Texas in the SEC tournament final on Sunday against Texas, and Bree Hall made all the difference. And Bree Hall plays with this sense of tenacity and chip on her shoulder. It's like her personality. She is so fired up, and she gets so, I mean, just like, she plays with this chip on her shoulder that I absolutely love. And you go back to the second matchup from Texas and South Carolina in the regular season, Bree Hall was on Madison Booker, the SEC Player of the Year, Texas's best player, one of the best scorers in the country. Madison Booker put up 20 points. And at the end of that game, she said, "She can't effing guard me." Bree Hall took that personally because she woke up on Sunday and she allegedly texted her parents, "I'm shutting her down," because she knew she was going to be on Madison Booker, and she did. Madison Booker had 0 points until the final 2 minutes of the first half. She only had 3 points by the fourth quarter. She had 10 points overall, but really that game was on ice by the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. South Carolina absolutely took away Texas's most powerful weapon, and it was Bree Hall who did it. So I don't think she's going to get the credit that she deserves because it didn't show up in the box score. You don't see that kind of, you know, gaudy number of points or assists or whatever it might have been, but Bree Hall was a pivotal part of winning the SEC tournament. South Carolina's third in a row. So credit to Bree Hall for what she was able to do and really what she's been doing all season long.
Yeah, Caroline, I love that pick. One, because defense in the tournament is important, right? Like, everybody can't score 90 points, but if I can hold you to 50, I have a chance to win. And I feel like South Carolina can do that. But also, too, anytime you see Dawn Staley and Vic Schaefer playing, like, you know it's a battle. You know it's a dogfight. You know this is for all the bragging rights. I think the clip that stood out to me the most about Bree Hall is the one time she's guarding Madison Booker and she pokes the ball from her and then she claps a few times in her face like she's ready to go. And I'm like, yes, bro, because we can't be scared out here. Like, you play for the Dawn Staley. This is South Carolina. Technically, this is your court that we're playing on. Like, you own the SEC tournament. So I thought that was great. I also just thought ludicrous that South Carolina has won 9 out of the last 11 SEC championships. That is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
They've done that. And they've never lost their fire in this process. And I like, to me, and I love the way you described that defensive effort, both of you. Because I think back to, like, Jay Will used to always say that tenacity and effort are decisions. You make a decision every time you walk out on the court and if you're going to give those. When you watch that South Carolina team approach the defensive side of the ball, they make that decision every single night. And it's so easy to me to become complacent in that. It's so easy to have an off night in that. Effort is a decision when you step on the court. And a lot of teams, to me, when they have that level of success, come out with a little of it, and then they feel like they can throttle it up when they need to. That's just not how Dawn Staley coaches. Like, the fact that her voice resonates that much with the continued success she has, just, I think it's unparalleled. As much as we talk about their success as a program, I think we could talk about it 10 times more, and it still wouldn't be justice to how dominant they are.
And I looked back to that UConn game. And I thought, and you can look at losses as a whole and say that can either break you or that can make you that much stronger. South Carolina got obliterated by UConn. It was a 30-plus point game. That doesn't happen to South Carolina. South Carolina losing doesn't happen, much less in the fashion that they lost to UConn. They turned around. They were able to say, hey, look, we sucked. I actually talked to Dawn Staley last week, and she said, look, if my team sucks, I'll tell them they suck. But when my team's great, I will tell them that they are great. I will give credit where credit is due, but we also have to look at ourselves in the mirror and acknowledge that on any given day, if we don't have our best effort, if we don't have our best day, we will get beat in this league, in the tournament, whenever it might be. So that UConn game, I think, probably lit a fire under South Carolina. And when it could have broken them, when it could have maybe divided the locker room a little bit, it at least looks as if it made the South Carolina team even stronger. That's a strong locker room, and that's a trickle-down effect from their head coach, Dawn Staley. I could talk about Dawn Staley literally all day long, but let's get into our image, our eye of NIL. Fitz, what was an image that stuck out to you from this past week?
Okay, so I was, frankly, to be honest, transparent, I was going to go with the floater, but you already mentioned the floater by Bama to beat Auburn. So I want to go somewhere else, all right? I'm going to go to a personal experience, all right? I was at the UConn game Saturday afternoon, up at Gamble. First time all year I've been able to go to a UConn game. And there was a moment that hit me, for anyone that goes back and watches the broadcast, I don't know if it was on the broadcast, but they introduce all their players at senior day, right? Like, so everybody gets their love. And at the end of all their introductions, while the UConn on the floor spits out fire, they introduce Dan Hurley. And I looked at my buddies that I was there with, and because for any, I won't do it in the mic because it will kill your ears, but they say his name for what has to be at least 30 seconds. It's yelled as long as they can hold it, and then Hurley as long as they can hold it. And the crowd went nuts. And it's funny to me because it speaks to the rock star status of Hurley with the Connecticut program. But I also looked at my buddy standing around me and said, could you imagine if they ever tried to even pull that off, even tried to do that with a Coach K? Or tried to do that with an Izzo, or tried to do that with any of the legends of the game that we've seen for years and years. Like, the number of times I'm used to college basketball coaches that don't want that. Like, college basketball coaches that in the middle of their introduction are like, stop it, let's go. They're already walking out to the huddle. No, Hurley was getting introduced. He's hyping the crowd up. And I looked at it and I thought, man, it works. It works for Connecticut. It works for Hurley. Who am I to question it? But certainly the image of it is burned in my head because it's a reminder of what really moves the needle for that program. It's a reminder of who the actual star is of that program. It's a reminder of what Connecticut feels as a fan base makes them different. And it's a reminder of exactly why Hurley acts the way he acts when he acts the way he acts. Like, I don't know how you can maintain any level of just normalcy when you are essentially being introduced like you're Taylor Swift at the beginning of a basketball game, far and above all of your players.
I mean, he's Taylor Swift superstar status in the state of Connecticut.
I was going to say, and this is on a down year. Imagine you went to a game after they won the chip. This is a down year.
It stunned me. It stuck in my head. I'm interested to see if they have a couple of down years in a row. Like, I want to go. I don't think Connecticut's about to have a downturn, let's be honest. But I'd love to go back to Gamble in a couple of years and see if they've had a few barely, 8-9 seed years. Is that still Dan Hurley for 30 seconds with fire exploding everywhere? Or is it just like, Dan Hurley? You know, that like most. and your coach. Dan Hurley. I just think, it'll be interesting.
Probably not. I mean, look, if you got 7, 8, 9 years of having down years, then all of a sudden a whole lot of things get old. But with the amount of success that Dan Hurley has had at UConn, I think that it makes it that much easier to play into some of the Dan Hurley antics. He's one of those coaches that, like, if he's not your coach, you probably hate him. But if he is your coach, you love him. There are so 100%. Many coaches out there like that. I think Lane Kiffin at Ole Miss is a good example of that. That if you're on the outside looking into Ole Miss, you're probably thinking, this guy with his Twitter fingers and his antics. But if he's your coach, you love him. You embrace him. You celebrate how he's probably not beloved by everyone else in the country. And I think that makes the fan base that much tighter and just that much more unique and special. It's like, if you're not with us, you're against us.
That's and Caroline, to that point, I'll quickly say, as I mentioned last week, I grew up, a late 80s, early 90s UNLV fan. Tarkanian, and y'all are too young to remember these things, but Jerry Tarkanian was a polarizing figure, because back then I don't think it was really a secret that UNLV was spreading money to everybody everywhere, right? And Tark would just sit on his seat, and he would he'd bite on a towel. That was the thing. He always had a big hand towel, and he would just chew on it during the game while he watched his guys play. And he became this hated figure everywhere outside of Las Vegas. And in Vegas, man, you couldn't tell anybody anything about Tark. Like, to this day, when Tark passed years ago. UNLV did everything at their campus to recognize him. He is still a legend to people that grew up and around Vegas. I think there is a bit of a Tark element to Hurley. Like, it's just one. He's your rock star. So you don't care what anybody else thinks because he's your rock star.
No doubt. Ice, what was one image that stuck out to you?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Kara Lawson, head coach of Duke women's basketball, holding the ACC trophy. One of the reasons this stuck out to me, to be quite honest, because if you know Kara Lawson and you know about her career as a player and then as a coach, and she was on the Celtics for a little bit, you just knew eventually she was going to win a championship. Like, you knew eventually that her elitism in life was going to take over and win Duke a championship. I feel like, for me, being totally honest, I didn't see it coming this year. I had no idea that Duke was capable of winning the ACC Women's Championship. I just thought between NC State or Notre Dame, really, who we've seen kind of fall off here towards the end of regular season, a little in postseason, I thought they were going to have it, but Kara Lawson won it. This is the third Black head coach in three straight consecutive years to win an ACC championship. It was Kenny Brooks at Virginia Tech. Last year was Nyeal Ivey with the Irish and Notre Dame, and this year Kara Lawson and Duke. I just think it's awesome to see what we're seeing in ACC women's basketball. And that put Duke on the map, I think, bigger than we thought they were going to be for the NCAA tournament. Honestly, put my foot in my mouth, because I didn't see them coming, guys. I didn't think they were going to be this good at this point in the season, and they are. So shout out to Kara Lawson and the gang.
What makes such great coaches? Obviously, we give them credit for recruiting and game planning going into individual games. What I don't think that we give coaches enough credit for is in-game adjustments. And I thought that Kara Lawson had a masterclass in an in-game adjustment at halftime of the ACC championship, because it was, they were down, what, 2-3? It was a very close game going into half. Duke outscored NC State 47-26 in the second half. And I was with you, Ice, that I never really saw Duke as any sort of contender, at least in the NCAA tournament. Never really saw them as a real contender in the ACC tournament. I thought, okay, this is NC State's story. This is Notre Dame's day. These are the teams that we've been talking about as legitimate contenders for months now. But credit to Duke and credit to Kara Lawson for what they were able to do on Sunday in the ACC tournament final.
Yeah, also, it's the big next step for her, right? Like, because I think because of the Celtics part of her background, when she came over to the college game, there were a lot of expectations. And I think she's met those expectations, but the expectations were so high that, you know, going to the Sweet 16 isn't enough, right, for so many people. So I looked at this as just the congratulations to accomplishing the next step that I think we all thought would be there. It's just been a progression. Like, she's building something in front of us. Like, we're used to seeing programs that are built. She is building that at Duke. And I think this is huge. So we look back at this one in 5 years and say, oh, yeah, that was the transcendent moment that Duke became one of those types of teams.
100%. And one image that sticks out to me from this past week is Haley Van Lith holding the Big 12 belt after the Big 12 tournament, after they won the Big 12 tournament. Haley Van Lith, if you go back to last year, she was at LSU. She transferred from Louisville, and at Louisville, she was the star. She made herself one of the biggest names in women's college basketball. She transfers to LSU after they won the national championship. It felt like she was kind of that next missing piece to keep that team on track and to maybe go for a back-to-back title. Haley Van Lith struggled at LSU. I went to LSU, so I'm obviously, you know, on Twitter and online and talking to LSU fans. I was very in tune to the commentary on Haley Van Lith, that she was holding the team back. She struggled at LSU. It was a legitimate thing. I mean, she went viral several times. She became a meme at LSU for just how a strange of a fit it felt at LSU. She transferred to TCU to get kind of a fresh start. She was Big 12 Tournament MVP. She was Big 12 Player of the Year. TCU won the Big 12 regular season. TCU won the Big 12 tournament. That Haley Van Lith was that missing piece at TCU that I think she thought, we all thought, she was going to be at LSU. So watching her wear the Big 12 tournament champion hat and hold up the belt and talk to reporters as confetti is falling, it just felt like the perfect kind of comeuppance in a way for what she wasn't able to do last year, and just felt like the perfect career resurgence for her. So I was thrilled for her and thrilled for TCU as well. This is the 2 years ago. They won one conference game only 2 years ago, and now here they are, Big 12 tournament champions.
Doesn't that, guys, speak to the importance of the transfer portal? Like, I know I rail on this all the time, but man, not every, and I mean the word kid, because like age, these are kids. Not every kid goes into a situation that is right or gets the best out of them. And sometimes they got to figure out new opportunities and new chances. And it's something we allow everybody else in every other walk of life to do. And I know fans have gotten really jaded with the transfer portal, but then when you see examples like this, somebody going out and finding the best version of themselves, like these are the things that we need to like make a Polaroid of, stick it up on the wall and say, hey, for every hater of the transfer portal, if I get one person, one kid, male or female, one person that can go out and get the best of themselves out of it, I'll take 20 other opportunities that fail for that one person to have the opportunity to find the best in themselves. I looked at that and thought the same thing, Caroline, when it comes to redemption. But man, it's just one thing that I think as a lover of college basketball, but I love the kids that play it. The transfer portal needs more credit in these instances of the greatness that has allowed people to accomplish.
I totally agree. And as someone who went to four different schools and picked wrong the first two times, it's just nice to see that at the end of her career, she can get what we feel like she deserves. I think Haley Van Lith has been a fan favorite for a very long time in women's college basketball. And the way she fell off last year to bounce back this year. Also, those are the first championships that TCU has won, guys. The regular season, and then to outright win the Big 12 championship and championship. Like, I just think that's amazing to see. The storyline is there. Now the question is, though, can you go into the NCAA tournament and really make some noise? Did we just see it in the Big 12 and you just were able to beat Baylor and that's what was there? Or can they take this momentum into the NCAA tournament and make a stomp? I'm looking out for Haley Van Lith, though. I root for her. I want her to do well.
Yeah, I'm happy for her, but you're right. The most important things have yet to be accomplished. Natasha Bedingfield said it best. The rest is still unwritten. Let's move on to Liked It. Fitz, what'd you like this past weekend?
Okay, so I'm going to go so off the rails here. Nobody knows about this but me. I live walkable to a small school called Central Connecticut. All right, Central Connecticut is in the NEC. I know you don't know about the NEC. It's fine. The Central Connecticut track and field team runs through my lawn. We need to have a conversation about that. Every day is part of their practice for the long distance runners, right? Like, it's awesome. Like, you can hear the marching band during football season and when they practice during the week. It's great. Central Connecticut on Saturday, and you want to talk about pressure. If they win, they're in. Currently on Lenardi, they're projected as a 15 seed, which for a school like Central Connecticut is huge. On Saturday, they were up by 21 and they melted down and they just took their foot off the gas, and that game went to overtime. And one of the coolest things to me is to see a bunch of kids that now suddenly feel the weight of, oh my God, we just blew our only shot at the NCAA tournament. They came out with the thunder of the gods in overtime. They get the win tonight, Tuesday night. They're playing at home. I tried today to buy a ticket. I was going to support Central Connecticut. Completely sold out. You can't get into the gym. They don't even have standing room only GA tickets left. For small schools, it's just a reminder of why nothing in sports can touch the NCAA tournament. Because if you're the smallest school in the world, you start the beginning of the year and say, you know what? There's a path. For us to get to the NCAA tournament, there's a path for me to have a moment I will remember for the rest of my life. And when you see it for schools like Central Connecticut, it's a reminder of exactly what makes March Madness so stinking awesome.
Aw, I love that story. Look at you pulling from the home team.
Look at that.
I love that. I'll give mine. Something that I liked was seeing Juju Watkins score more points than Caitlin Clark in her second year playing college basketball. I mean, we all know the impact that CeCe had on the women's college game, scoring the most points ever. And so to see Juju in her sophomore year pass her, she's behind Kelsey Mitchell, who has the all-time record in two seasons, but just historic. I mean, I don't throw out the term generational talent lightly. I don't think we should ever throw that out lightly, but Juju is that. And her numbers and the records that she's making and she's breaking are supporting that. So that was something that I liked. Although I felt kind of bad because Caroline, they dropped the Big Ten tournament. Like UCLA just found a way to beat them the third time. Literally third time's a charm. Whoever came up with that millions of years ago, you were right. Because UCLA beat them. And so it was like a good thing that, you know, she's number two in terms of points scored in her second season, but not able to get a Big Ten championship in her sophomore year.
That I mean, Big Ten
she
championship.
Tried, I can't put that Big Ten championship game on her. Like she was otherworldly in that game.
I mean, that always, was the kind of game is. Where it was the ultimate, like, I just hope both teams have fun. Like, in sports, like, I feel like we always have to pick a side. But in this game, I was like, I want UCLA to finally, you know, get that proverbial monkey off their back and finally beat USC. But also, it doesn't feel fair that USC beat UCLA twice in the regular season and they don't get the Big Ten tournament title. But it does feel like there's a whole lot of sharing going on. USC gets the regular season title. UCLA wins the tournament. You know, we're all friends here. But the fact that we've gotten that matchup three times and it's only March 11th, like, what have we done to deserve this? What, like, how did we get so lucky? Both of these teams, when they play each other, play with this unlocked level of just pissed offedness. And I know that's not a word, but that's how they play. It is nasty. It is fiery. It is passionate. Like, we see a different Juju Watkins, a different Lauren Betts, a different USC and UCLA, respectively, when these two teams play each other. And the fact that we very well could get this matchup again in the Final Four, potentially in the national championship game. Like, I am, you know, keeping all of my fingers and toes crossed that we get that game again. But to your point about Juju Watkins, every time she does something, I feel lucky that I get to watch it because she is just so incredibly fun to watch. But I did get frustrated with USC on Sunday watching that game. Like, can you help her out a little bit, please? Girl can't do it herself. But yeah, Juju Watkins is absolutely incredible. One thing that I liked, kind of piggybacking off of Fitz's point, I have fallen in love with Omaha men's basketball. And frankly, I didn't even know that the Omaha Mavericks existed like a week ago. And now they're my favorite story of March so far. So if you missed it, Omaha beat St. Thomas in the Summit League Championship. They already had a berth to the NCAA tournament going into the championship game because St. Thomas is ineligible to make the tournament because they're still transitioning into D1, which is one of the stupidest things that the NCAA does, which is saying a lot because the NCAA does a lot of stupid things, but I digress. So Omaha punched their ticket to the tournament for the first time ever, made even better by the fact that their head coach, Chris Crutchfield, played at Omaha, is an Omaha alum. So watching him, you know, talk to reporters after the media, watching him get dumped with confetti after that game and just take in all of the emotions, it was really awesome to see. And it's, you know, whenever you take a job like that, I know that he probably appreciates Omaha much more than anyone else would since he played there. That's where he got his start. That's where he went. To be the first person to do something, whether it's anywhere, but especially your alma mater, I can only imagine just like the amount of pride that that must feel. So I loved to see that.
Good pick. I was in the studio for that game. We had that game on CBS Sports Network. And so I was in the studio for that. And just his like post-game interview, the emotion that was there. I mean, it's like, I don't know. It's like Fitz said, like there's just nothing that can duplicate the NCAA March Madness feels. You just know that history is being made left and right. And two, I always keep my eye on those teams because those are the teams that go like 25-5 during the season, and we don't pay attention to because they're Omaha and it's the Summit League and like, oh, it's not the Power Four. But then you get to the tournament and you see the 25-5 team taking an SEC team down to the wire and you're like, oh my goodness, what happened here? Like, I also think it's a very good basketball team that we should watch out for in the NCAA tournament. I think Chris Crutchfield is an incredible coach.
March is like, guys, Disney World. It's magical. Anything can happen.
It's like, it's crazy to me because the players and the coaches and everybody around the program, they'll remember it for the rest of their lives. So will every kid that goes to that school. Like, whatever they do, whether they go to the game or whether it's a watch party, you'll remember for the rest of your life. Oh, my God. Like, if you go to Duke or North Carolina or a place like that, you're used to it. It's par for the course. It's fine. If you go to Omaha, I mean, just the fact that you're going to be able to either go to or watch with your buddies a game for your school in that moment, you never, like, you're going to be 60 years old talking about it. There's just, that's part of what makes it so cool to me for as opposed to everybody else, where you can be a lifelong diehard fan of a program or of a team, and then every once in a while they'll make the playoffs. It's just not the same emphasis as, like, the first time we've ever made the tournament. That's wild.
And it's not every year that we get that. Not every year that we get a school or a program punching their ticket to the tournament for the very first time. Sometimes we get programs that haven't been there in 30 something years or whatever it might be. But the fact that we get, at least, I think we have three at least so far this year, SIU, Edwardsville, Omaha, and I think I'm missing one, but I believe there's three that have punched their ticket to the tournament for the very first time. Like, that is so incredible. That's the reason why we love this sport and we love this month so, so much. All right, we'll take a quick break here. Power Hour, Power Rank, who we think should be the top four seeds in both the men's and women's side, coming up next. All right, Power Hour, Power Rankings. I thought that I knew exactly who's going to be the number one overall seed on both sides, on men's and women's. I thought I knew who was 2, 3, and 4. I had everything all figured out in my head. And then madness happened, because it is, in fact, March. Let's start on the men's side of things. Who we think will be the top four seeds come Selection Sunday. I've got to just throw some names out, some programs out. You tell me if I'm right or wrong, just in the fact that they could be in the conversation. Number one, Auburn. I think fair. Number one overall seed, locked up, secured, no matter what happens in the SEC tournament, ice.
Man, I would have said this. I would have said, yes, they could have lost back-to-back games to end the regular season, and it wouldn't have mattered because of the way that they dominated the SEC, because of the amount of quad one wins that they have, far more than any other team in the country. Actually, the next closest team, Michigan State, who I feel like, if they go out and do what they're supposed to do in their Big Ten tournament, could secure a number one seed. There is still very much time and room for them to do that. And Tom Izzo's squad looks like they're playing the second best basketball we're seeing in the country right now. I still think Auburn is the number one overall seed. I still don't think there's a team in the country that I can comfortably say deserves that over them. But
who's playing the best basketball? Their hands. Ice, but, who's right, playing the best right. basketball in the country right now?
I think it's Sparty. It's scary, but I think it's Sparty.
Not Duke?
I mean, where's Duke in this conversation? Like, I know the ACC.
They could be playing the best. Right, that's the problem. That's the problem is they could be playing the best basketball, but the ACC is not challenging them like everybody else is challenging them. So Auburn drops games to Alabama. Right now, if you put Duke against Alabama, I don't think Duke is winning. I just don't. I still think Alabama has that. So right now, I feel like Duke is playing their best basketball right now, yes, but they're not the best team in the country. I'm just not seeing it.
Mm. So this is hard for me because I feel like Duke and Auburn are really in this who's going to be the number one overall seed. And I respect so much what the SEC has done. And by the way, I thought I was going to give you my hot take that Michigan State still has a shot at a one seed, but you were on the same page. I love this.
My bad. Yeah.
But I feel like there is some element of, look, Auburn, all Auburn's got to do is be Auburn once in the SEC tournament, and everything's fine. Auburn comes out and just looks dominant. Everybody takes a sigh of relief. They get the number one overall seed, and I think Duke probably gets the second number one seed. If Duke goes out and just rails everybody and Auburn has another really iffy game, it's just the door feels like it's cracked open. I think Auburn's resume, just resume alone, is untouchable. But, man, it just feels like the door's a little cracked open.
Yeah, I'm so surprised about Auburn. I'm so surprised. Like, I get it in terms of, like, being a competitor and, like, at this point in the season, everybody's tired. You're exhausted. You had the number one seed for, like, 8 weeks. It's the SEC. Like, you were bound to drop one. But dropping two to finish the regular season for anybody, it just puts you on, like, a caution alert. Like, hey, get it back together. Like, what are you doing here? Let's go. Let's not also forget that this is one of the oldest teams in America right now. They're freaking older than some of the NBA teams that we're seeing. So, like, it's also a maturity standpoint. Like, hey, you got to finish the season strong. I don't care how many quad one wins you have. You got to finish the season strong.
I think that maturity factor is a relevant conversation after what we saw from Chad Baker-Mazzara. Really, what we've seen from his antics all season long. Fair concern to have. And I said last week, if Auburn loses to Bama, coming off of that loss to Texas A&M, if they lose to Alabama and they don't win a single game in the SEC tournament, they are still firmly the number one overall seed. But then that happened, and I thought, well, I didn't think they were going to do that. Like I said that they could, but I didn't think that they were going to. But to add context to it, they lost to Texas A&M on the road right after Auburn secured the regular season title. Texas A&M was coming off of a 4-game losing streak. Maybe we should have seen that coming. That not that Auburn didn't want to win or wasn't playing with a certain amount of fire, but maybe Texas A&M was just playing with another level of passion and fire, knowing that they needed to get that game, knowing that getting back into the win column and in very dramatic fashion against Auburn would serve them well going into the postseason. And it's not like Auburn got blown out by a bunch of scrubs on Saturday. It was a very close buzzer beater game decided by just a couple of points against one of the best teams in the country in Alabama that now returns into a one seed conversation. So, yes, it's so strange to see Auburn lose back-to-back games after they'd only lost one SEC game throughout the rest of the season. But can we really hold them to a different, I don't want to say accountability, but I guess accountability, whenever they lost to two top 25 teams, whenever they had already accomplished everything that they wanted to accomplish in the regular season. So if they lose to, let's say, a South Carolina, you know, one of the worst teams in the SEC in the SEC tournament, then maybe we can have that conversation. But if Auburn falls in the SEC tournament by, you know, 2 points to Florida, you know, like, I still think Auburn is the number one overall seed, but I do understand the concern, and I do think, to be fair, it is a lot of recency bias.
If I can just be a bit of a stirrer, a madness creator, I will let everybody know that according to KenPom now, Duke is number one and Auburn's two. So if you've got analytics people in the committee room, there's the analytics from KenPom. Which, you know, I'm still not smart enough to know how the hell they come up with it. But the analytics from KenPom say Duke over Auburn. Barely, but, you know, it's a reminder that there's still plenty of basketball left, weirdly, as we go into this week.
And also, it brings up the question, how much do you think the committee cares about the conference tournaments? How much do they really value them?
I think when you have quality, I think when you have this many teams crammed up against each other, you're still proving something every night.
Well, if 100%. Duke wins the ACC tournament, how much is the committee really going to put weight into that, considering how down the ACC is?
Yeah, I think it's more like it's theirs to lose, right? I think if we see them lose a game, then it's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But I think it's more so like it's theirs to lose. For the ACC tournament, I think on the men's side, it's teams like Clemson that we're keeping our eye on. You know, like, are you winning the way you're supposed to be winning right now? Wake Forest, team that was on the bubble, are you winning a couple of games that you can? And I think for Duke, it's just the expected dominance. Like, it's their tournament. Same thing that I said about Michigan State. That's their tournament to lose. They don't win the Big Ten tournament. Somebody else came and shocked the world. which it's March, so I'm here for.
So let's say things go as planned. Things go chalk throughout the tournament. So in this situation, are we all comfortable putting Auburn as the top number one seed and Duke as the second number one seed?
That is how I would do it. Especially, let's say both of these teams win their conference tournaments. And it's for sure Auburn is the number one overall seed.
100%. Right. Okay. I agree.
So then is Houston the third of the one seeds?
Have to be. I think you have to give them the third seed over Florida, for me, would be that next number one seed. But I think you have to give it to Houston. They've been dominant. 27-4. They've handled the Big 12 like no other. I think you have to give it to them.
So that fourth number one seed.
This is where guys like
Alabama, Michigan State.
If Michigan State runs through the Big Ten tournament and they dominate everybody, like if they win this Big Ten tournament, and as well as they're playing, you talk about efficiency on offense. I keep talking about the fact that they can't score a three. It doesn't matter that they can't shoot the long ball because, frankly, they don't waste possessions when they drive. Like they shoot so well from inside that it's pretty staggering to me. I'm looking at Michigan State saying right now if I had Michigan State versus Florida on a neutral field, I think I'd lean Sparty. And especially if Michigan State runs through this thing and wins the Big Ten, like what else do you want them to do?
So let's pose this question. Let's say, and I don't know what the SEC tournament bracket looks like, but let's just say Auburn loses to Florida in the SEC tournament. Florida is your SEC champion. Let's say Michigan State wins the Big Ten championship. That final one seed is up for grabs. You have an SEC tournament champion and a Big Ten tournament champion. Florida or Michigan State. And I know that's an if. There's a lot of basketball
Florida.
Left to
like,
be played.
Florida would have had so much resume between now and then. Like, winning the SEC tournament is going to make you... The SEC tournament's a bigger gauntlet than the Big Ten tournament. There's no doubt in my mind.
Let's say another team. Let's say Tennessee wins the SEC tournament. I don't think that they would still be... I don't think they're in the conversation for a one seed. But let's just say a team outside of the teams that we've been talking about. Let's say a Tennessee or an Arkansas wins the SEC tournament. Michigan State wins the Big Ten tournament. Florida and Auburn both have, you know, their runs, but they ultimately fall in the quarter or semis. Does Michigan State edge out those teams for a one seed?
I think they could edge out Florida. I'm not seeing them edge out Auburn. I just don't think that we can erase all that Auburn has done all season, even though they dropped the last two. And like you said, as long as they win a game in the SEC tournament, it won't be surprising. They'll be exactly where they're supposed to be. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, for Florida, I'm looking at the bracket now. If everything goes chalk in the SEC tournament game, the first game for Florida will be against Missouri, the seventh seed. If they win that, and again, everything has gone chalk, they would then take on Alabama in the next round. So if Florida loses to Missouri and Michigan State wins the Big Ten championship game, yes, I think Michigan State would be more deserving at that point of a one seed. If Florida loses to Bama... That's where things like we're going to end up with the final four seeds in the SEC all being top five teams. Like I don't know. I think Michigan State would have to absolutely destroy everybody in the Big Ten, and they would need a team like Florida to lose early to get that one seed.
And we can play hypotheticals with what will happen in some of these conference tournaments all day long. But let's just say conference tournaments aren't a thing in our imaginary basketball world. And we are the selection committee. We are making these decisions today, March 11th, when we're recording this podcast. Who are our top four seeds? We'll go around the room. Is Auburn the number one overall seed today?
Yes.
I says yes.
Yes.
I say yes as well. Auburn is our number one overall seed with Duke with the second one seed.
For me, yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Houston at three?
Yep.
Yes.
Are we putting Michigan State above Florida at four?
No, today is the stance. It's Florida.
I'm going Florida.
Florida.
Yeah,
I would do Florida
today
as well.
It's Florida.
I would agree. So we've got Auburn, Duke, Houston, and Florida as our 4-1 seeds. Of course, all of these things are subject to change according to what happens in conference tournaments. Let's go to what I think is an even more difficult conversation. And that's on the women's side, because there are very few times when I am not jealous of any committee and the decisions that they have to make. I am not jealous of the women's selection committee and the decisions that they have to make to decide who are the top four seeds, because you have deserving teams. You have like 10 deserving teams of one seed: South Carolina, Texas, UConn, UCLA, USC, Notre Dame question mark. They might be in a little bit of trouble. And then you have TCU and Duke, who both won their respective conference tournaments. Who was the number one overall seed? You can make a very strong argument, I think, for South Carolina, for Texas, for USC, and for UCLA. I mean, like if you're in that committee room, who are you pounding on the table for? Who do you think today is the number one overall seed?
Yeah, so it is tough because I think USC could have clinched it if they won the Big Ten championship. I think they had it in their hands. It was in their destiny. And then UCLA was like, you're not beating us for a third time. Can't say how important that win was for UCLA, especially just for their confidence to finally beat Juju Watkins and USC. I think South Carolina, though, is the number one overall seed. I normally say at this time of year, in Dawn we trust, because it's just normally this time of year that Dawn Staley doesn't make many mistakes and that South Carolina is ready to go. But I also think the way in which they manhandled Texas in the SEC championship, like those teams were split in the regular season and then championship time, South Carolina wins by 20. They look like they're playing any other team in the SEC. I felt like that dominant win for them gives them a number one overall seed.
How angry is Gino going to be when you're right and the number one overall seed is a team that his UConn team just absolutely annihilated? Like, the hardest part for me is it's why I'm glad I'm not in the committee room, Ice, because I think you're right. I think South Carolina is the number one seed here, probably. Like, so if South Carolina is the number one seed and I'm UConn and I beat them so bad and I haven't lost a game. I have one loss, Tennessee, in the last couple of months, right? Like, I've done everything you need me to do, and I'm likely not a one seed. Like, that's hard for me to swallow. I annihilated your top overall team. That should count for something, but I can't find the runway because I agree with you. I think the teams we're mentioning have better resumes right now. That feels weird.
That would be a stronger argument for UConn had they not lost to Tennessee. I just can't get past that loss. And look, it's Tennessee. I mean, it's one of the, richest history programs in America. Tennessee is a top 20 team in the country. It's not a bad loss. But when you're comparing those losses to South Carolina's losses, Texas, formerly the number one team in the country, UCLA, formerly the number one team in the country, and then UConn. Yes, that UConn loss was a 30-point loss. That's a bad loss, but that's a good UConn team. And UCLA's losses were only to USC, and USC's only loss was, to UCLA in the tournament. They lost to Iowa, and that's a bad loss. But look, like, when we're comparing like teeny tiny little things, we're splitting hairs here. South Carolina beat Tennessee. UConn didn't beat Tennessee. UConn beat South Carolina, but I think what South Carolina has done to kind of quote-unquote avenge that loss, what they did to Texas in the SEC tournament, and then you look at South Carolina's schedule as a whole, you look at South Carolina's conference schedule compared to UConn's conference schedule. I know you can't control, what conference you play, and you can't control if you have a strong or a weak conference, but I understand the argument. But I don't think that can overshadow what South Carolina has done since then and what South Carolina did before that UConn loss.
I think I'll add one other layer to that. That 2-point loss to USC way back whenever that was, like in the fall for UConn, that feels bad now. Because if you have that win over USC, it flips all of this. And it's amazing how one great game that was a 2-point loss, but it's a home loss to a team that right now is sitting with a resume that's above yours. Like, this is why every single game really does matter, even though it doesn't feel like in a long season it should.
And also, I think UCLA has a big case, too. They beat South Carolina earlier in the season. They beat South Carolina by 15 points. They're the Big Ten champions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the thing for UCLA is they only have two losses on the season, and the only two losses are to USC. like the rest of the teams that they have played, they've beat. I think it's kind of like almost like a catch 22 in that, like, does USC almost just have their number? Because otherwise they challenge themselves in the non-conference for sure. And they have a 30-2 record and a Big Ten championship. To me, USC is my second number one seed. I think they've earned that. I'm actually very impressed by the way they weathered the Big Ten. And that's a conference that's expected to have 12 teams
insane
in the NCAA tournament. It is a deep conference. We talk about the Big Ten on the women's side like we do the SEC on the men's side, and UCLA rolled through everyone but USC. That's extremely impressive.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the 3-1 seeds that I'm confident on here, South Carolina, USC, and UCLA. I mean, I don't care that we got the same conference. I'd have 2-1 seeds from one conference. So it's really about who's the other number one seed, but I think USC and UCLA's resumes both put them squarely into that top four conversation.
Yeah.
And then you can't forget about Texas.
I mean, you cannot. Like, you cannot forget about Texas. Can I give you my hot take about Texas, though, Caroline?
Please.
My hot take. My hot take about Texas is this. They can defend anybody. I think you could put them on the court, and they will make it an ugly game. They can defend anybody. Unfortunately, though, I don't have faith that Texas can score like a number one seed is supposed to score. I just don't see it. I think they're going to get to the tournament, and Vic Schaefer's done this before. He's won games in the tournament in the Elite Eight 49-48. I mean, it's been ugly. It's been low scoring. It's been a dogfight. You're like, I don't really want to watch this, but I have to because it's an Elite Eight game. But I think that they can win. I just am not confident in their scoring ability at this time in the year. But I do believe that if we're looking at all other teams that could possibly have a one seed, you see Duke, who won the ACC championship we've talked about. Notre Dame, who's taken a slide, so I can't give it to. North Carolina State, who's taken a slide, so I can't give it to. I think you have to give it to Texas. And I think there's a big difference between Texas and TCU. But I just need Texas to score a little more consistently for me to say that they're really, really, really about to do something in this NCAA tournament, unless y'all want to see games under 40 points.
Yeah, and
I don't. I'll add personally. I don't.
Yeah, no.
No, thank you.
You mentioned it quickly, but I'll double down. Notre Dame not being a one seed is at this point a disappointment. Like, considering where we were on this team a month ago versus where we are now, like, you're not even a one. It's not that you're not the number one team in the country anymore. You're not even a one seed. Man, that's a disappointment for Notre Dame, absolutely, for the way that they ended their season.
And it was theirs to lose, right? Yep. I mean, they went undefeated in conference play, and then the last two out of three, they lost to Florida State. They lost to NC State, and then didn't win the ACC tournament, and lost to Duke. And yes, again, these are all good losses, right? These are all great teams, top 25 teams, but just not what you thought was going to happen if you're the Irish. So I agree. I think it's so surprising that they are not a number one seed, but they did it to themselves. Their fate was in their hands.
It just shows how thin the margin for error is in this sport, that you drop a couple of games and now all of a sudden you're completely out of a one seed conversation when just 2 weeks ago you were the number one team in the country. Wild to not see Notre Dame, if we do in fact not see Notre Dame as a one seed, would also be wild to not see UConn as a one seed, because UConn is number one in the net. Like, UConn did do to South Carolina what nobody has done to South Carolina really since John Staley has gotten there. But again, that just shows how thin the margin for error is. UConn loses one game to a top 20 team by like 8 points, and now all of a sudden it's like, UConn, no, two seed. Yeah.
This is that age-old who you taking out, you know? Like, I think UConn's deserving of a one seed, but who you taking out? And I can't justify any of the teams that we've already mentioned being out of the position they're in.
But again, if UConn is a one seed, let's say over Texas, I don't really know how I can really argue with that. I wouldn't do it, but I don't have a strong case against it.
Yeah, I think I would just argue the strength of schedule. You know, it's not the same being undefeated in the SEC as it is in the Big East. You know, I mean, that is their expectation for UConn, is to go undefeated in the Big East. And honestly, guys, like, their closest game they had this season in conference was 11 points. They just won the championship by 20 points, right? Yeah. So, like, the reason we talked about their Tennessee game and their game against South Carolina, those are so important because they don't get challenged very much in conference play, whereas a Texas, a South Carolina, a USC, and UCLA, it's been dogfights day in and day out.
That's very fair. That is so fair. Oh,
yeah. We need UConn in a different conference. Good. That's what we need.
100%.
That's what we need. We need UConn in the SEC, and then we can talk about it next year. We need them in a different conference, unfortunately.
We've talked about super teams, like on the college football side, combining the Big Ten and the SEC in this massive just glob of the best teams in the country. If I could hand pick women's basketball programs, and okay, Texas and South Carolina, USC, UCLA, UConn, NC State, Notre Dame, LSU, Kentucky, Tennessee, all of you are in this massive glob. TCU, I'll throw in there, this massive glob of, it's like Gladiator. Throw them into a ring and then see who comes out alive. I would pay good money to see that.
Yeah, just make sure you only do that to college basketball, though, because nobody wants to see UConn in a super conference on football. I'm just saying, sorry, that's, UConn football. Nobody wants to watch that.
That's
good call. Good call.
That is fair. Oof, that would not be pretty. All right, quick break here. What we are watching in the conference tournaments coming up this week. Okay, what we are watching this week, can we say it on three? The tournament we're most intrigued to watch. One, two, three. SEC. It's the SEC. And I really wanted to be different. I wanted to think outside the box and be different, offer up a different point of view. There is no different point of view. The most intriguing conference tournament is the SEC. It's the teams at the top that we could potentially see play one another. The Floridas, the Alabamas, the Texas A&Ms, the Auburns, the Kentuckys, the Tennessees, so on and so forth. And then it's also the teams that are kind of fighting for their tournament lives at the bottom. Texas, who lost to Oklahoma and desperately needs a couple of wins in the SEC tournament. Oklahoma, that I would say is in today, but not comfortably. Arkansas, that's fighting for seeding. So it's really at the top and the bottom, just so many intriguing storylines here, Ice.
Yeah, I'm normally the first round of a conference tournament, you don't really watch. You know, you kind of just see who makes it through. And then the second round, you start getting your like fifth through eighth seeds. And so you're like, hey, it's a top half. Like, I'm going to watch and lock in. This is the tournament that I will be locked in from the beginning. Like, South Carolina and Arkansas, that's an important game.
Yeah.
Texas and Vanderbilt, that's an important game. LSU and Mississippi State, an important game. Oklahoma and Georgia, an important game.
Like, the game,
I think
maybe.
You're absolutely right. Might be the game because Oklahoma is like right there. But if they can get this win over Georgia, now you feel comfortable Selection Sunday that your name is going to be called. Same thing with Texas. I think Texas gets a win over Vanderbilt, and then they would have Texas A&M next. Rivalry game, anything can happen, baby, because it's March. So I just feel like that first round of the SEC tournament is going to decide the fate of some of these bubble teams, and I cannot wait.
Yeah, I mean, Lenardi's got Oklahoma as one of the last four in currently on his bubble watch. So, like, as a lover of chaos, what I'm really rooting for here is for, like, Oklahoma, Texas, and, like, I want a pit thief. I want the SEC to somehow give us a team that we don't even think is in. Like, I don't care if South Carolina wins the damn thing. I just want to see how many teams we can get into this tournament somehow, some way, from one conference. Only because it makes everybody's head explode. Like, it is the ultimate. I've said for years, whether we're talking about football or basketball, the my conference is better than your conference is really the grown-up equivalent of my dad can beat up your dad. Like, nobody ever actually fights and nobody really knows the final answer. But I want to see this just to watch SEC people walk around and tell us they're now a basketball conference and to watch everybody else lose their damn minds. Like, I want a bit deep out of the SEC.
Fitz, SEC people are already doing that.
I know.
SEC people been doing that. And it wasn't even true. But this year, at least, it's actually fair to say that this conference is, in fact, a basketball conference. It's going to be a blast. It's in my city, so I'm so excited. I'm going to be walking down to Bridgestone Arena, get to see some of the action here in Nashville. We will be back on Sunday. Normally the show is on a Tuesday, but we've got a very important Sunday coming up. Selection Sunday. We'll have all of our reactions to that. But that's going to do it for us here today. He's Jason Fitz. You can follow him on Twitter at Jason Fitz. She's Ice Young at Ice Young 23. You can find me at Caroline Fenton 1. Always appreciate you for stopping by the podcast. If you're new, welcome in. Happy to have you. Give the show a like, subscribe, review, tell your friends about it. Tell an Omaha fan, because I am a new Omaha fan, okay? I'm so happy that they're in the NCAA tournament. So we'll be back with our full Selection Sunday reaction as well. We'll make our March Madness picks. We'll make all of our predictions. So we're out.